history of the interview with Arthur Robinson, and what in the day-to-day is?
14th.
14th, December 14th. So you were saying?
Well, I was saying that we never really tried to set it up as a department, although we did think about it. But the main reason we didn't was, I think, because my view, and I was sort of the leader in this thing, my view was that in spite of itself, geography ought to have cartography hooked onto it, and that you can't be a very good map maker if you don't know your geography. Mm-hmm. Because there's so many decisions that you have to make that are based upon a fundamental understanding of general distributions and so on. So that I felt very strongly that it really ought to stay as part of geography. Also, it was cheaper. That is to say, we could use the same administrative staff, and that would save several bits of money and stuff like that in the administrative view of the desirability of this. But the main reason was that I thought it ought to be with geography. Now, if geography had stiff-armed it and said, no, you can't do it, then I think we would have gone ahead and tried to make a department. And they might still someday, I don't know, I mean, it all depends. But I think it's the way it ought to be now. And in general, I think that's the way most of the people in the department do. The big problem in the department now is simply that you're not allowed to hire people, and you hate to turn away students because you're paid on the basis of how many students you have, so to speak. And cartography gets all of the play, and the geography doesn't, and they get a little jealous of this. Which is reasonable. I mean, I understand that. And I don't think anybody in cartography is trying to take over or anything like that or push them out. They just want to have a sort of a fair shake in the whole business.
I gather at one point somebody was hired for cartography without a vote of approval or... Yeah, I think it was an appointment without a vote of approval by the geography faculty.
No, that's not so. That was when George Drury was threatened to quit.
Yes, that's right.
that wasn't true at all. I was directed to find out whether Phil Murky, who's on the staff now, would be interested in coming here, and if so, what would the terms be that he would be interested in, and all I did was call him up and ask him, and somebody got the idea that somehow or other I was able to offer him a job. Well, it's ridiculous. I can't offer anybody a job except when the dean says so, and the dean won't say so unless the department says so. So, I mean, it's as simple as that. But George got all hot and bothered about it and created quite a stir, and but that's all there was to it. There's no way anybody could hire anybody without the department okay.
With a vote, a faculty vote.
Well, there had to be. No. There's no way. The dean simply wouldn't listen to you unless you did have I mean, that's been that way for decades. And so the very idea that somebody could get hired without a departmental vote is crazy. Oh. It just couldn't happen. There's just no way you could do it.
This couldn't have been an earlier appointment. It was.
There weren't any. There weren't any. Every appointment that I know about, well, and that means all of them, because I'm the only one that's been here all that time, has always been through the department. There's no way you could do it otherwise.
Do the cartographers, can they don't teach courses in geography, they don't do elementary geography, presumably.
No, not the people in cartography now. I did. I taught.
Well, you were a mixture.
I taught physical geography for umpteen years here. But I don't think, no staff member that is brought here after me has ever taught anything other than a cartographic type course.
Mm-hmm.
Now there are a lot of those, but ranging from what we called photo interpretation back in the old days to all sorts of things now. But I don't think there's been what you could call, which would be a misnomer, a joint type appointment.
Yeah.
If it were two different departments, it would be a joint appointment.
Yeah.
But it's obviously not a joint appointment since it's all in the same department.
Mm-hmm.
No, well, there hasn't been any splitting of the kinds of activities. A little bit. No, I'll have to take that back. For many, many years, Andy Clark and I together taught a research orientation type course in the department jointly.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we stopped doing it, others did. And for many years, that was also jointly operated with somebody from cartography and somebody from geography as a joint course.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the only one.
Why is art history listed as one of the possible...
Well, the cartography, when we were setting up the program, we thought that there ought to be a minimum of two options for people to take, because cartography is just as broad a field as is geography or history. You can do almost any aspect of it. And to do that in such a way as to make it most useful to the largest number of students, we set up one as a kind of humanity option.
Mm-hmm.
Versus a mathematics science type option. And in the humanity option, we simply required that there has to be a certain number of courses in history or art history and then they have to do languages through the fifth semester so that they're good at it.
Mm-hmm.
I've forgotten some other things. I don't remember what they are now. Well, why art history? Well, there's a lot of art in cartography.
That's what you were saying.
Yeah, and art history is really a significant part. Now, we had one very good student who did her PhD in geography, of course, but in cartography, who minored in art history here on campus and was a top-notch student in art history. And the art historians would love to have had her as their own student. There's nothing unnatural about it, because you see there's an awful lot of especially in the older materials, an awful lot of art forms and so on in cartography, and all of the techniques and methods of preparation of maps, such as wood cuts and wood engravings and etching.
Mm-hmm.
And copper plate engraving, all these things were techniques that were used at the same time by people who were producing prints and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And a good many of the well-known people in art were also closely involved with cartography.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just a natural that if you want to know something about the background of your field, you really ought to know something about art history.
Yeah. That's nice.
It's very interesting. There are all sorts of carryovers. A lot of the early work especially was very closely allied to the artist and the woodcutters and so on. There are lots and lots of them.
Yeah. you've seen about this new book out on the history of map making, presumably. Would you as a cartographer want to own that? Or
which book are you talking about?
Well, I just saw a review of it in the last month. It's from the beginning.
The history of topographic maps, was that it?
Well, it's a layman's. It's a book for laymen, and it.
Well, there are all sorts of them. I mean,
well, this is a big.
Oh well, there are a lot of big ones. Yeah. There's a coffee table book.
Yes, it sounded like that.
Yeah, I don't have them here. All mine are home. Mm. Well, it goes back. We have very few artifacts in cartography from prior to the Middle Ages. Now, very little has survived. We know a lot about it because there's a lot of writing about it and stuff like that. But from the Middle Ages on, we got lots and lots and lots of them, and tremendous numbers of them were very, very ornate and were really art objects, rather like that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then lots of the maps in the later Middle Ages had all sorts of embellishments, which were primarily religious type, and they were the same ones that were used on cathedrals, and you see the gargoyles and all these kinds of things, and they were all through literature, and they just kept putting them on maps too. And so that plus the whole technical side makes it a very normal thing. I mean, I find Jim Watrous' book, for example, on early artist, I've forgotten the name of it, is right down my alley, and I've used it frequently as a reference to how they did things. And then there are a lot of good books, a couple of them by Ivans, prints and printmakers and this sort of thing. It's just normal.
Yeah.
Not so much now. That is to say, we're getting out of that now. The idea of the map as a work of art is no longer a very, you might say, au courant. It is artistic, but most people wouldn't think of it as being an art form now, but it was up until recently. Yeah.
I gather that there are a lot more women in geography now than there used to be.
Oh, I think so, yes. Yeah, uh-huh.
This is true in cartography also.
Yes, very much so. I don't know whether the proportions, so to speak, are any different in geography and cartography than they are in any other field.
But compared to the past.
But compared to the past. But I mean, I don't know whether there's been any big, if you were to look at the proportions I don't know that there'd be any difference between geography, cartography than any other area. But certainly, the woman in the field was really quite an oddity. There were a number of good ones way back, but relatively very, very few. They had to be awful good. And when I was a graduate student here from 1936 to 38, I think we had maybe 18 graduate students or something like that. And there were one or two girls in the outfit, and that was unusual. That was considered unusual. Mm-hmm. But nothing unusual about it now at all. There are lots and lots of women in cartography and all sorts of aspects of it. Why not? I can't think of any good reason. Especially in making maps. I mean, you don't have to go out and fight the elements and be macho and so on. You just do a good job. You know?
Yes, that's right. Particularly good place.
It's not like you have to lift something real heavy or, drawing things aren't heavy. You can use them as long as you got the manual dexterity.
Well, I've been asking you questions about the, sort of randomly about the cartographic lab, but is there, have you, did you want to present something about its history in your own way? That,
well, I
have,
think...
Have you written up the history of it?
No, no, I think probably in terms of its general history, what I've told you today is about it.
Mm-hmm.
It just steadily grew.
Did you get grants from other places than graduate school? I mean, were you going to the National Science Foundation?
No, we did not. We got, you remember I said at the beginning, Professor Sale was half Geological Natural History Survey and half Geography. So that, in a sense, that was a grant from Geological Natural History Survey. And we got, let's see, one of the things that was quite important, I mentioned in that little paper I sent to you, is that after the war, they set up this program called National Defense Education Act.
Mm-hmm.
Well, everything is defense, of course, but just to sell it. But these NDEA grants were really great. They were grants to individuals for graduate study, and they could, they were given them for, I think, 3 years, and they were very generous. So they were much the best kinds of research grants that a graduate student could get. And each one of them carried with it, each year, not quite a matching, but clear, almost, a matching grant of money to the institution. Which got the grant, and I can't remember. I think it was nearly the same amount of money. Well, this is quite a lot of money. You see, we had one, two, three. I think we had five NDEA people, and we had at least four of them all at once. Now we had them for 3 years. And each one of them was bringing in something like $2,500 to the university, and I never will be able to understand it, but they let us have the money.
I'm going to ask you, you've got the money.
I never asked them whether they should or not, but they turned it all over to us. Well, this was
specifically to the cartographic lab, presumably.
Well, yeah, we used it for that, mm-hmm. because we needed the lab to help teach these people, you see. We needed the equipment and so on. Well, this meant a lot, because this meant we were getting, say, up to $10,000 a year for several years, and that was a lot of money back in those days. And so we were able, with that money, to equip the laboratory with a lot of pretty expensive devices that we never could have afforded otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And so that really made a tremendous difference. And I think that probably was more important than anything else in terms of really getting the thing off the ground, because it takes money to make maps. It's a very expensive operation, because it takes so much time, and it's become so technical in terms of all of the manipulations that you do with films and proofing and colors and all this sort of thing, that you got to have a lot of really pretty classy equipment to do a good job. Otherwise, you're just back to the old hand drafting sort of stuff that simply is old fashioned anymore.
Did you charge places like UW Press?
Well, yeah, that's a good point. I'm glad you brought that up. We had we got a lot of money from the graduate school. And this money each year, this went on for quite a number of years, and we're still getting it, although I don't think it's from the graduate school any longer, I think it's from Letters and Science. This money was to be used, excuse me, to pay for things that were to be done in connection with university activities which would not be commercial. Mm-hmm. Now, nobody can accuse the university press of being commercial.
That's right.
And so when the press came up with something that they wanted, if it wasn't very big, we would simply do it and charge it to the to this fund, this support fund, as we called it. If the press came up with something that was pretty big, like the three-volume history of the Crusades or something like that, then we said, no way you're going to do that, because you're just taking all the money there is in the support mm-hmm. fund. So you're going to have to go find some money somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And so they probably went to the graduate school or to somewhere else and said, look, we need some more money.
Yeah.
So yes, we did. No, we didn't. It depended upon it. But a professor in any department in the university could come to the cartographic laboratory and say, look, I'm doing a paper and it's to be published in the Historical Review or something like that, and I need a couple of maps for it. And he got them, and it was paid for out of the support fund.
Hmm.
And that's the way we kept our accounts, and we still do. Although now it's evolved to the point that it's a revolving fund operation. But we did maps for the U.S. Bureau of the Census, for example. We'd make a contract with them.
But they must have paid you.
Oh, yeah, they paid. Mm-hmm. And we worked for the state, and we worked for agencies. Now we work for companies.
Who handled the business arrangements? That must have been rather complicated.
Well, it wasn't too complicated to begin with, and I did. I mean, I just kept track of stuff, you know, and so on. And we had these regular computer printouts and so on of where we stood in our budgets, which were never right. Now the cartographic laboratory has a full-time business manager just to keep track of all this stuff. It's a very complicated business.
I should think so.
It's a big organization.
Mm-hmm. And he's in this building too?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. If you would like, so you know what I'm talking about, I'd be happy to take you on a short tour.
Well, it'd be fun. I did when I was editing Andy Clark's book.
Oh, yeah.
I remember coming over
yeah.
and
long, how long ago was that?
That was a long time. It was late 60s.
You wouldn't recognize the place.
Oh,
no.
I expect you're right.
Yeah, you wouldn't
no,
recognize.
I would like that.
I wouldn't even know. I've been out of it now for some years, and I don't think I could tell you what some of the machines do anymore.
No.
Although I think I could figure it out in a hurry. But I just go inside the place occasionally to see somebody. I keep away from it.
Yeah.
That's their worry. But as I said, I'd be glad to show you around and show you what it's like.
Yeah. Would you like to see something about the IES issue?
Well, I wasn't very much involved in any issue. I was an instructor in IES, or no, not IES. I was thought you said ILS.
No, I'm talking about Institute of Environmental Studies.
IES.
And that is a very sore thing with geography.
That is a sore point with geography. And I think they have a point there. But it's... if there is anything that the geography department ought to be, it is an Institute of Environmental Studies,
mm-hmm.
Because that's what it's doing.
I notice you call two of your majors Environmental Studies.
I don't know.
I was looking through a couple of catalogs.
I really don't know. But Environmental Studies in the IES was brought into being as an organization, primarily with the through the activity of Reed Bryson, mm-hmm. Who had been a member of this department way back when. And Reed is what I would what I would call a very active entrepreneur of research, and there are lots and lots of things that need doing in terms of environment, studying environment, that a pure academic department of geography just can't do. It's too big an area. It's too big a field. Now it could, but it needs people like Reed Bryson to do it, who will get in there and do the organizing and go after the grants and so on. And again, I come back to the point that geography at Wisconsin has been a straightforward, academically research-oriented instructional organization, with the, in what was really for a very long time the standard tradition of letters and science here. You were teachers. Mm-hmm. You did some research on the side in order to keep up with things and because it was good and so on, but fundamentally you were a teacher. And that's not what that's not what IES started out to be. IES started out to be something that would make the world a better place. Not by teaching, but it would make it a better place. And you were going to be doing good. Now you did this by worrying about air pollution and all sorts of of kinds of things in this very complicated thing we call the environment. Well, a lot of it is just pure geography, but a lot of it isn't. But it's very difficult because the whole way the administration is set up, IES was getting instructional money, separately from the instructional money in the college budget for ordinary teaching. And this irked the geographers something fierce, because IES would then go set up a course which would not have to account for it, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And this was
this of course paralleling a geography course.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this was very bothersome. And it was really a very fundamental intellectual conflict. They didn't see any reason why there should be two outfits doing the same thing. Well, of course, on the other side of it, I didn't read Bryson's mind, but on the other hand, if he could get away with it, why not? This is the way an administrator generally would think. In our world, bigger is better. And so there was a lot of conflict, but there was an awful lot of cooperation too. We have staff members in IES. Let me give you the impression that geography is anti-IES. They were anti this duplication of coursework, which IES wanted to do. Geography simply said, we don't think this is the right way to run a railroad.
IES is not under LMS.
It has a separate kind of budget.
In any case, it would have to go through the divisional committees.
Yeah, and a lot of it got stuck because lots of other departments complained too, just like geography did. Again, it is not that they were against IES, they were against this instructional duplication.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the part that we and a lot of others objected to, is that there was no need for this. We had these kinds of courses, and if they wanted to set up a curriculum, they could set up a curriculum and make the students take the course instead of offering their own courses, where they could get instructional money from some other source that it didn't, that the college didn't have any control.
Yeah.
This was a very bothersome thing. And that was the fundamental argument about the whole business. Not that we were against IES.
Have other geography departments done that sort of thing within
We have departments of geography and environmental studies. We have departments of environmental studies, which is a new name for the geography department.
So this was the kind of person Reed Bryson was, presumably, that led to it going the way it did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, but he got some good people around him, and they're very active promoters, and they built a pretty good thing out of it.
And he'd argue that he wouldn't have gotten the federal grants, presumably.
Oh, well, identify.
No, that's all right. That's just.
Well, that was fundamentally the point, that he thought the things that they were doing were more important than the things that we thought we were doing. And we just weren't buying it, that's all. And that was the only real conflict. But on the other hand, a lot of geography people did do that and are doing it now, working in IES. Mm-hmm. Working with grant money and so on, so it's worked out all right. But the big problem was not that. The big problem was this duplication of instruction,
mm-hmm.
and that was we thought a very serious affair. And I don't know whatever happened to it because I retired before the thing got resolved.
Yeah. I'm sure there must be. I haven't looked into it, but there must. I know this. There were faculty meetings on the subject,
No, it was
must be well documented.
Yeah, it was a hot matter for a while.
Yes.
but that I think is all that I can add to that. I thoroughly agreed with the geography side of this thing. Although I also strongly endorse many of the things that IES does. But on this matter of duplication of instruction, I couldn't see it.
Yeah.
One of their problems was that they had trouble getting students. And the one way they could get them is to lock them into their own curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
And then they wanted to have a degree in IES and so on, and I don't know whether they ever got that or
They've
not.
They've got a certificate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think we objected to that too, but I don't remember why now.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're talking about the TA strike from 1970.
There's a fundamental difference between what we have done in geography and what is done, say, in English, and in some of these other departments where they have enormous student loads. No graduate student, with very, very few exceptions to fill in when somebody was on leave, ever offered an independent course in geography. All they were project and graduate assistants. And they taught labs and quizzes, but they didn't do any lecturing. They were not the ones to give grades and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And this was rather very carefully handled in this department, whereas I know from other that other departments it has not been carefully handled. And graduate students have been given full authority over pretty good sized courses and so on, and that would never have happened here. So we never had any problems that way. There wasn't any conflict because you never would have they were simply subsidized students, always. That's all they were here. They weren't making a living by teaching and doing occasional graduate work, as some of the others were. I know this for a fact. Yeah. You know? I had some harrowing stories come back to me about the way some of the graduate students were handling courses which were supposed to be being handled by a full-time professor. He never showed up once the whole semester. The students didn't even know what he looked like.
But he was the...
Oh, this one was in, I think this one was in mathematics. Mm. And, which again is the sort of thing that could happen in a pretty straightforward field where you're teaching things that everybody's been teaching for decades. I mean, calculus is calculus, and it doesn't change much, you know. And, so you could, somebody that's in mathematics, if he's in mathematics as a graduate student, he sure knows enough to teach those kinds of courses. But that would never happen in geography. You wouldn't know enough. Mm-hmm. The geography is, well, it's like history. It's the same sort of thing.
But you could have just been lucky. I mean, a lot had to do with the personality of the students in the...
Yeah. Well, we have occasionally done that. That is to say, somebody's gone on leave and we couldn't find an adequate replacement. We would pick one top-notch graduate student and say, okay, you can teach this course this semester. But that was strictly an unusual affair. Not usual at all, as in English, for example. And we had sections, but they were sections that were part of a bigger course. Now, when I was teaching at Ohio State as a graduate student, we had a full course. But I had a section, but I taught that section. It didn't meet anywhere else. I was it. That was quite a different thing from here. Here you were under pretty hefty supervision. We always did that.
So you didn't have the severe split between faculty and graduate students?
We had no split. Well, there's always one or two individuals who are going to be out there doing things for the good of everybody, but I cannot remember that we had any significant kind of thing. Yeah. I just don't remember. I just don't remember any. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I've talked to quite a few people about TA strike, and their geography isn't one of the departments that they mentioned as suffering from it.
But I don't have any other recollection other than being intellectually very concerned about the very idea of having students put in a position where they were having more authority than I thought they ought to have. I know that one of the things that we did in geography, and I did, I taught physical geography for, I suppose, 18 years, every semester, which is pretty deadly. A big course. I had a couple hundred students all the time, and we had sections, lab sections and quiz sections. And I always met with the teaching assistants once a week, went over the stuff with them that were going on, and got their input in terms of their working with the students and what the students didn't understand. And this sort of thing. So we worked very closely together, and we thought that was the normal way to do things. Mm-hmm. The TAs wanted to have this institutionalized, and made sort of mandatory type thing, and nothing could be done until somebody had okayed it, this kind of stuff. And I just didn't think that's the way it ought to be done. But we had always been doing this, and so that's why we had no trouble.
Did you have your students out to your house?
We had lots of students out, yeah. As the years went on, it got less and less. Yeah, we had students out, I suppose the usual thing for many years is we had lots of students out for Thanksgiving and Christmas time, dinner, because a lot of them were here and didn't have anywhere else to go and stuff like that. And then we had always a big social get-together when Andy Clark and I taught this joint introduction to research and presentation, or whatever we called it, which all incoming graduate students had to take. And we did this alternately at his house and my house.
So that was graduate students?
Oh yes, these were graduate students. Didn't have as much social contact with the undergraduate students. This was something we usually worried about a lot in the department. Because we thought we ought to do more of it, but it was just difficult. We tried to set up geography clubs, and we'd have a fall picnic and a spring picnic and a Christmas party, and then it would sort of fall apart next year until somebody else would get hot on it, and then off we'd go again. It's difficult to do in an institution like Wisconsin, which is big. You can do it easily at a place like Oberlin.
Yeah.
My father and mother there, for example, they had students in all the time. It's just standard procedure. But when you're living in a place like Madison in order to find our place, you have to know how to ride the bus system out and where to get off and so on. It's kind of difficult to do, whereas in Oberlin, anybody can walk anywhere. It becomes an operation when you've got to, and then you don't want to slight people, and you got a lot of students, and you can't have them all because your wife won't put up with it, it's a big operation, and so it tends to fall apart in a big institution, except for the ones that we made pretty standard to this course of get-together, which was a fun night, and did a lot of crazy things, otherwise it was simply individuals who I was working with as graduate students, and we'd have them out for Thanksgiving, and sometimes we'd have them out for dinner or something like that. But it got to be less and less the bigger the university got.
Yes, I'm sure you're talking about the 50s, I'm sure.
Yeah.
By the time you got into the 60s,
it became difficult. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's always one of the things that kind of bothered me, but I don't know, you're always so darn busy at this place, and it wasn't the way it was when I was growing up. My father is dean of letters and science and chairman of the history department at Miami University, always played tennis every afternoon. Now, can you imagine that here?
You had to really discipline yourself here to do it.
Life was just at a different pace.
Yeah.
It's just, now, Miami University was a liberal arts college, like Oberlin. I suspect that at Oberlin they still do that. Because you're not pressured to, by competition, to produce research as fast. You have time for socializing with your colleagues and with the students, and that's part of your job.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not part of your job here.
Do you think that makes much of a difference in the department, that decline in socializing?
Uh, Oh, I don't really, yeah, I think it does. I think it does. We were a much closer knit department back in the 50s than they are now.
But was it because it was smaller or because you didn't socialize so much?
It was because it was smaller and we did socialize more.
So yeah. It'd be hard to say which was the...
I suspect that it's a matter of a combination of size, but it's also a matter of the fact that the field in geography, and I'm sure this is true in other fields, has become more and more specialized. Individuals in it go off in their own specialization. There are some people in this department that there's no way I could talk to them about what they're doing. I wouldn't understand. Just completely beyond
and
me.
That's yeah. New.
Yeah.
It
wouldn't have happened, no. We were all more or less the same in the 50s. It wasn't until we began to specialize. But this has happened throughout geography, I know, and I assume that it has in a good many other areas. I hate to see it because I think it isn't what I call university. it's becoming a training school. There's a lot of difference. You're not getting near as much education as you are training. I wrote a paper once upon a time, a contribution of cartography and liberal education or something like that. It was a dying gasp of this sort of stuff. I thought it was great, and I still do, but it's not what's happening. It's going quite the other way. And I don't care what the field is, it seems to me it's happening in all of us.
Interesting to see it.
That's why I'm not at all sure that if I knew back then what I know now, I would have opted to go to a place like Oberlin instead of to Wisconsin. I would have been a straightforward teacher and probably would have been happier. I wouldn't have been so pushed and pressured and so on. But Wisconsin was all right, but then it changed.
Yeah.
That's the trouble. When I was here as a graduate student, I had the feeling that this was a university and that I was getting a lot of education and so on, and so were the students. I was working with the undergraduates as a teaching assistant and so on. But now I get much less feeling of that than there was then. And I think it's simply a matter of combination of size and the fact of increasing specialization.
Yeah.
So you can't stop it, so right. There's no point in trying. But I'm sorry to see it happen. It was more fun back then. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Does the poker group take care of any of that, or is it so separate from the...
It's pretty separate. We never talk about anything but poker.
Yeah.
No, it's just occasionally some remark is made, but by and large, that's strictly there to test your probability instincts.
Yeah.
No, we don't discuss business at all. And I'm happy for that. But I do, going over to Trip Commons every noon and sitting down with different groups and just talking about things in general, and didn't make what difference what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And then that all died out because we got so pushed with time and everything else that everybody started bringing his own lunch and eating in his office. And so that fell by the wayside.
Didn't you think that was because of the war and the anti-war movement? Or did you not associate those two?
No, I didn't associate those two. No, no. We tried to do it at the University Club for a while, but that wasn't very satisfactory. I know I, for example, dropped out and rejoined the University Club probably two or three times, hoping that it would be more what I had remembered. But I found that if I go over there for lunch, which was pleasant enough, and then if I wanted to sit down and read in there, in the reading room, afterward for a while, I felt pretty guilty. I ought to be back here working.
Oh, really?
And I don't know, that was just an attitude of you got to keep going, it's expected of you type thing. Somehow this is quite different than it used to be.
This is when you were still teaching?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Hmm. Well, I taught all the way up till I retired, yeah. But...
I thought maybe you were talking about now.
No. No, Trewartha, until he had his recent operation, always went over to the University Club every noon. Hartshorn frequently goes there. Mm-hmm. But I'm a different generation. Very few of my generation, which is one
You're
step below,
there, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, one step down, very few of mine ever used the University Club much. Except back in the early days.
Mm.
Then we did regular. But I don't know of anybody in recent years in this department that has regularly used the University Club. Or even occasionally used the University Club.
Yeah.
Now both my son and daughter do. I don't know how come, but of course, they're out in the engineering school, and there's not much out there to get away from it. And they find they're both kind of intellectually liberal arts type people, and I think they enjoy the associations with others. But I just never quite felt that I had the time anymore to socialize at the University Club. Mm. But when we were first here, we'd go to dances and we'd go there to have dinner once a week and stuff like this. But we stopped doing that.
Mm.
Not because we just stopped, that's all. I can't put my finger on why.
Well, it's a universal phenomenon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
People talk about it.
Yeah.
Were you on committees very much?
I was on several committees. One of the standard, well, of course, a lot of committees in the department, but that doesn't count.
Mm.
I had one big committee. Responsibility was that for several years I was chairman of the Committee on Student Conduct and Appeals of the university. Which was quite an interesting experience, and a totally different from what it is now. And I was on the athletic board for a fair number of years, in which I was a real burr in the saddle.
Why?
Oh, because I don't like things being inconsistent, and it bothered me no end that a student could come here and play football, but a student could come here and if he had those same grades, he couldn't be a cheerleader.
Mm.
In other words, I don't like this. This is dumb. There's a double standard. And
yes.
So I kept yakking about it all the time. They were glad when I left, I think.
Did you have any colleagues of like mind on the committee?
Not many, though some of them were bothered by inconsistencies, but not enough to do anything about it. But I was on the athletic board when we got a new football coach and a new basketball coach, and this was always very interesting. And but I guess I never felt that athletics was the sacred cow that most of those on the athletic board thought it was. I must say that I do not have any feeling at all except that in big time athletics, Wisconsin does about as clean and decent a job as any place I've ever heard of. Certainly more so than most of the others in the Big Ten. Mm. And I had not the slightest question about the integrity of the fact that the students were supposed to be students first and athletes second. But that's about as far as it went. They did a lot of things about this that I just think we'd be better off if we didn't have it. But I didn't propose that at the athletic board.
Why did they put you on the board?
Well, partly to be a burr, I think, and partly because I was also a burr on the student conduct and appeals business. And this was one way of getting me off one and putting me on another. I think because I'm not bragging, but I've been pretty independent, and I speak my mind, and stick up for what I think ought to be, and I think Elgin was looking for somebody to be on the athletic board like that. It was fine with me. I was glad to get. I said I wouldn't do it unless I got off the other one. Okay, you're off. I didn't make a nuisance of myself, but I did ask a lot of pointed questions that hadn't, I think, mostly been asked. You see, the athletic board was there are alumni members on it, and there weren't student members then, and they're faculty members, and the faculty members are pretty carefully chosen to be very much in favor of athletics.
I should imagine so. Oh, that's yeah. What I wondered about.
The alumni members, of course, automatically are all in favor of athletics. Mm. And so I think Elvium and whoever else was in administration at the time figured that that's true, and it wouldn't hurt to have somebody that just is perfectly willing to be independent. I didn't cause any real trouble. I'm wanting them to think about things that they ought to think about. This business of grades, for example, on these standardized tests and so forth, boy, they're slicing stuff pretty thin there. It's because somebody's a good football player. That bothers me a lot, and it still does. They're strictly professional now. Well, there's no doubt about it.
What do you mean?
Well, the students are getting paid to play football.
Oh, I see.
That's what they're doing. They come here on these grants and aid. And the grant and aid is, now there are nice rules about it, that you can't take it away from them if they get injured, even if they can't play anymore the rest of their career, you got to keep it up and stuff like that, which is, I think, proper. But on the other hand, you're paying them to play football and basketball. There's no question about it. I mean, they're getting paid. Now, it's a great deal for them. They get a chance to come to university, which many of them couldn't afford otherwise. But that's just a small number of people, not very many out of 40,000 at the university. And yet they get a big break out of it. I think we'd be better off if we just had straight professional 15th, or we didn't have it, one way or the other.
Because you didn't have to go to classes, you mean?
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. It's tough work. I mean, I sympathize with the football player. That's hard work. Mm. That's really hard work to try to do that and to keep up with your classes, too. That's really tough. They earn their money. There's just no question about it. But the university doesn't get much out of it, except money for athletic programs. And as I say, at Wisconsin, they're really very good about it. They put all that money into all kinds of stuff that doesn't pay out. Like cross country and all these women's programs and so on, all of which I'm very much in favor of. One of the things, incidentally, I got myself in trouble with on the athletic board, and I'm very proud of it, is that I argued for women's program.
You did?
Yeah.
Before, this was the
oh, yes.
Time
oh, yeah. And boy, did I get clobbered by the other members of the board.
What years was this?
Why do you ask me things like that? I don't remember. Let's see. I know when it was. I must have been on the board for 3 or 4 years, and I got off the board when I had my first Guggenheim back in 1964. that was what got me off the board, and I was grateful to Simon.
So that really was a time before there was any thought of women's.
Oh yeah, but I was a strong proponent of it, and I just got laughed out of the place. The very idea, you want to marry one of those? No, really, that kind of.
Really?
Oh yeah, so that was bigotry of the worst kind, and you can imagine I didn't take kindly to that sort of intellect, so I had a lot of fun, but I reiterate that Wisconsin is a pretty straightforward outfit when it comes to athletics. We did a lot of investigating through transcript study and stuff like that of other places, and Wisconsin is lily white compared to most of them.
And I gather this recent affair is really not Wisconsin's fault at all.
Some crazy alumni trying to sneak something around, you know. Mm.
We're just about at the end of the tape. In fact, I guess we...